All right, I'm live. Camera works, microphone works, GeoHyperDoll works. Tell me if it doesn't work. In fact, tell me if it does work, just to make sure, because I have unplugged and replugged so many things today. And I had a spammer call me about an hour ago, trying to sell me website services for TroyHuntSucks.com. And I was going to have so much fun with it. I got the microphone out, I had Audacity going, and I was going to record the fun with the spammer trying to sell me services for TroyHuntSucks.com. And it didn't work. Sound didn't work. It didn't record. So obviously I'd unplugged the wrong thing. So g'day, Martin. Thank you for chiming in. Martin, do you hear me? Do I sound all right? Have I plugged all the plugs back into the right place? I did test this beforehand, so hopefully it is still okay. Anyway, let me jump into it. Someone usually tells me soon enough if it doesn't work. I've got a heap of stuff today, loud and clear. Thank you, Martin. Good on you, mate. Cheers. Appreciate that. I have got a heap of stuff today, and I do want to spend a lot of time talking about all of the things that are around me in the blog post that I pushed probably just about 10 minutes ago. But somehow I managed to end up with a 3 blog post week, which has been a while because I have had some things going on in my life. G'day, Burton. Thank you for joining, and I will make a mention of Burton as well for this camera setup later on too. So a lot has been happening this week. And in fact, one of the things that happened this week, the big one, which was, and I know that it was really like a milestone that I was looking forward to, because I don't think that's the right word to use here. But Have I Been Pwned hit 10 billion records. It didn't really hit 10 billion. It was nine, what was it? 9 point something billion. And then it just like smashed through 10 billion. And then it kept going all the way to almost 10.1 billion. And I decided to write a little piece about this, because I think it's just sort of fascinating to see where my little project has gone. And I kind of put out a tweet sometime during the week where I said, new data breach now loading to Have I Been Pwned. Of course, this was the Wattpad data breach with about 270 million records. And I said, that'll push it well over 10 billion records. Wow, insane. Never thought I'd be here doing this with those numbers. It's been a fun little project. Now, of course, you could look at it one way and go, well, 10 billion, maybe not so little. That would be possibly a rather large project. On the other hand, it's still me just sitting here doing exactly the same thing that I did almost 7 years ago now. So, when I say little, and I've referred to pet project a few times in here, this is still the way I look at it. It is a fun little project. And I kind of made a few points here about this whole merger and acquisition M&A process from last year, which frankly almost killed me, and the realizations I'd had around the fact that this is my pet project, my baby. I want to keep it this way. I really don't want to go down that road again. That was an absolute bloody nightmare. I think I made a point here. I said it wasn't even Have I Been Pwned. So this was in relation to a ZDNet article. ZDNet, where are we? ZDNet. ZDNet article that Zach Whitaker wrote, where he said buyers were only interested in a deal that would tie Hunt to their brand for years, buying the exclusivity to his own recognition and future work. That's where the value in Have I Been Pwned is. And effectively what Zach was saying, and Zach spoke to a bunch of people, including myself, about this, was that when I went through this M&A process, people weren't trying to buy Have I Been Pwned. They're literally trying to buy me for years and years to come, which is, first of all, a very odd feeling. And second of all, not such a great feeling a lot of the time. And the point of it was that this was about tying me up. I mean, you can't really buy the data. The data's out there. It's around. People will find it. There's a big question about the legitimacy of even selling, because I don't think it's quite that black and white, the data. To be honest, the code, yeah, it's nothing special. I've written about most of it online anyway. Like, you could sit down with the team and build the whole thing in a week anyway, so that's not really it. The architecture, it's, yeah, I put some thought into it, but again, it was a week of work. So this was what was the heart of it. And I said here in this blog post, it wasn't even Have I Been Pwned that was the tradable commodity. It was me, and that just didn't feel right. With the benefit of many months of clarity since that process, I can say one thing for sure: that's never going to happen, ever. So people are not going to be buying me. Not for sale. Not for sale. I like it here. This is relaxing. God, imagine if the thing had a sold and then I was stuck being responsible in the middle of coronavirus, and I can just sit here and be irresponsible instead. Anyway, Looking at some of the comments, it's always beer o'clock when you have a good excuse. So here's, I'll tell you what, this is never going to be truer than this weekend. I'm doing a podcast tomorrow morning called InfoSec Whiskey. And they say I need to drink whiskey when I do it. Apparently that's the way it works. And it's at 9:30 tomorrow morning. So that's going to be fun. That'll be a really interesting podcast. We'll see what happens to the rest of my Saturday after that. Regardless, that was the 10 billion mark. Also pushed the Have I Been Pwned Twitter account through 100,000 followers this week as well, which was really, really quite significant. So few big things there on the Have I Been Pwned front, which is nice. Yeah, Martin, work-life balance is a good thing. it has actually been a busy week. I was going to say hence the beer. And this is literally the first sip of beer I've had today because I have been churning out most of my day sitting here trying to finish that big blog post, which I'll get to about all the stuff around me. So another thing I wrote about this week was Beer Advocate, speaking of beer. And this was really, really interesting because this was one of these cases where someone from Beer Advocate, I've just called him my guy. I don't want to name him. I don't know if he would like that or not. But someone in a position to do so reached out and said, look, someone has been saying that we've had a data breach, and they're very, very emphatic about us having had a data breach. And they're drawing this conclusion because the same email address and password that they used on our service has appeared somewhere else. And I hear this all the time. And as I said in the blog post here, I've literally got another blog post in draft about all the reasons why that particular observation doesn't necessarily mean you've had a breach. So it's things like, first of all, people reuse their usernames and passwords everywhere, so there's that. Second of all, the one I often hear is people say, I used my email address on your service and I put the name of your service in it, like plus alias it or used it, you know, on a catch-all domain or something, and I got spammed to it, ergo, you've had a data breach. It's like, well, that could be one ergo. Another ergo is the organization uses external third parties to enrich and enhance their customer base. And we've seen many data breaches of those. I've been in one. And that third party had an incident. Or that third party used a mail provider, which then logged some data, and then that was exposed. I'm like, there's all these different reasons why. So I thought this was what it was going to be. And then I sort of said to him, look, do you mind sharing the email address of the person involved? And they said, okay, look, we can do that. And I found that the only data breach they're in Have I Been Pwned was the one that was flagged as Coupon Mom and Armor Games, and that was flagged as unverified because I just wasn't completely confident about where it had come from. And I knew that there was Coupon Mom data in there, and I knew there were Armor Games data in there because I emailed with Have I Been Pwned subscribers that were in both of those, and they verified the data and verified that they were in those websites or they had accounts. But I just didn't know what else was there. And what was really interesting is when I actually pulled the original data breach back, and we'll come back again to why I keep these original data breaches, I found 816 rows of credential pairs with the word Beer Advocate in it. And then I'm going, oh, this is interesting. That's very coincidental. Maybe Beer Advocate has had a data breach. And it was like, I've got a screen cap here that's redacted, but it's like Beer Advocate at. And then Beer Advocate in plus aliasing and email addresses and loads of passwords called Beer Advocate. Incidentally, Beer Advocate, don't let people use a password of Beer Advocate on the Beer Advocate website. That is not a good thing to do. Maybe they don't do that anymore because this does seem to have been from a while ago. So when we found that, it was like, look, you have almost certainly had a data breach because there is a huge amount of correlation here. So they started digging into it and inevitably decided that there was a data breach and they notified people. And then the first I knew that they'd notified people is every time there's any data breach of any size, people pop up and they're like, hey, Troy, have you seen this? And it's like, yep, I know what happened there. I think I'll write a blog post about that. There's a question here. First beer you've had today, mate, I'd be expecting almost 24/7 given your job. Yep. sometimes you're right. Someone else asked what beer it was. I thought someone did and then it disappeared. I'll tell you anyway. So this is a Moo Brew, which I think is a Tasmanian beer, a Moo Brew Dark Ale. It's not precisely what I wanted. I was indoors pretty much all day today because it was also a very rare rainy day on the Gold Coast. And I got to the end of the day and I really felt like a beer, but not just a beer. What I really wanted is I wanted like a whiskey-infused Russian Imperial Stout. Not fussy at all. So I went down to one of the local shops here, which was my best chance of getting anything decent, and that was as close as I got, which is nowhere near as close as I wanted to be. So I need to get on to one of the online ordering services and fix that right up. Beer Advocate, I'm just noticing Centersphere's comment here. Beer Advocate, did you have a chat with the beer farmers? I haven't spoken to the beer farmers about that, actually. So the beer farmers, find them on Twitter. They're good guys. We do chat about a bunch of stuff. So that might be a good one for them as well, because it is a little bit on brand, as they would say. All right, so I'm going to flip around a little bit because I'm going to talk about some blog posts and then just other random stuff in between it as well. Not entirely random, like it's related to my week and to InfoSec. Or in this case, related to related to Twitter and online life. Oh, Twitter. So let me just open up the tweet. I asked a question. That was my first problem. I asked a question here. I said, what's the simplest way to publish a static website to an Azure app service from Visual Studio Code? I don't want to sign into my Azure account. It's on my son's PC. Can a published profile be used? Seems like it's either that or FTP. Now, I thought the question was pretty clear. I've got an Azure app service. My son, who's 10 years old, we'll talk about him in a moment, has got a website. He would like to publish it to the website. What is the cleanest way to do that with Visual Studio Code? Seemed clear to me. I got all these answers about how to do it without Azure App Service. You shouldn't be using Azure App Service. You should be using GitHub Pages. All right, but I'm not. So how do I do it with the thing that I asked to do it with? And I kind of lamented in here, I put another comment on it, which seemed to resonate. I said, this is the most Twitter of exchanges. Hey, does anyone have an answer for X? And people come back and they say, let me tell you about Y instead. And that's, I don't know, it's just it's an annoyance. It's like, yes, I'm aware of GitHub Pages. I know that they are a thing and I know they exist. But there are reasons why I chose to go down the path that I did. And people started talking about all sorts of other funky deployment methods. And I'll tell you why I wanted to use FTP. Because I wanted my son to learn how to do it the hard way, just like I had to when I was his age. I didn't start building web apps until I was 18. But the way we used to do it back in the day, I wanted him to understand a bit about FTP. And then, of course, I had another bloody argument with people about how FTPS is effectively an implementation of FTP. And even if I say FTP, it doesn't mean it's not over an encrypted connection. It's not the point. It's a 10-year-old publishing his website and trying to distill bite-sized concepts to him bit by bit by bit. So that, to me, was a little bit of a Twitter annoyance where you just seem to can't have, oh my geez, I'm like four mouthfuls in. It has been a long day. You can't seem to have simple discussions about the on-topic thing that you picked without them going off the rails. Flipping over to the comments for a second, you should be a guest on Windows Weekly and have a beer tip with Mary Jo Foley. I love Mary Jo Foley. I'd love to do that. I'd definitely do that. Azure App Service is a pain if you don't use full-fat VS. Well, yes and no. So the ultimate answer I found for it is within Visual Studio Code, I got an extension, which was an FTP extension. I downloaded the published profile from the app service. I pulled out the credentials and I set him up and I said, mate, here's what you do. This is how you make your website live. You push this button and it goes live. We will talk about the mechanics of FTP later on. But when you're teaching a 10-year-old how to build web apps, there is a process to get there. You're not just going to like give the guy the whole thing in one go. Now, speaking of which, we do have his website live. Let me just make sure he hasn't broken it yet. And then we'll talk about it. So we have arihunt.com.au. I would have liked to have had Ari Hunt. This is A-R-I Hunt. .com, but someone's domain squatting on, and someone's domain squatting on my daughter's name too. So I couldn't get arihunt.com and lhunt.com. So I have arihunt.com.au and lhunt.com.au, and domain squatters can go and get stuffed. Now, I have been teaching him the basics of web app development for some time, most notably HTML development for some time. In fact, this began, I remember a few years ago, he got invited to go and do some coding at another school because he'd shown some interest in it. And he came home from the other school with pages of handwritten HTML, like literally A4 pages, pencil, and a 7-year-old's handwriting with HTML tags. And I had a little tear in my eye, if I'm honest. I was like super, super proud to see him do that. So we have had him building a website in Visual Studio Code for a while because it does help a little bit with auto closing tags and things like that. And it's a nice little basic IDE that anyone can use. And he had built a website all about superheroes and things. And he wanted to go from scratch with this. And I just really wanted him to get it live. Like I wanted him to get something on the web. So what we ended up doing is just going, all right, mate, index.html, go for it. And it's the basic stuff. It's like, okay, where do you start? I need an HTML tag. Okay, then you need a head tag. What goes in the head? Well, the title goes in the head, so on and so forth. And it's the simple, simple basic mechanics. And what I love about this is that if I go back here and I pull out this book on my shelf, this is HTML for Dummies. And this is the book that I learned from when I was 18 many years ago, and of course you had to back then because there wasn't a lot of stuff on the web, but it's still the same stuff. The tags are all in uppercase, which feels a bit funky, but other than that, it's all the same stuff. And I love that you can still do this today. And I also love, just while I've been talking about Have I Been Pwned, Have I Been Pwned like literally started with HTML head title tag. That's the genesis of everything that is big and awesome on the web today. It starts with that same sort of basic foundation. So I think it's super cool he can do that. A couple of comments I've seen here. I see you've already set him up with Cloudflare. Yes. So we will have the discussion, him and I, later on. Not only is it Cloudflare, but there's HSTS preloaded as well. Thank you very much. So no one's ever going to be able to go to his domain insecurely once that preload sort of flushes through. I will have the discussion with him about the security things later on. But this is just kind of one of those things that's like, just put the building blocks there. Later on, we'll come back and talk about that. Now, so someone's asked here, Senosphere, what's the domain? I'm literally going to copy and paste it into the comments just here, and then you'll see it. You can all hit that at once because it runs on the cloud. Incidentally, very, very fast website when it's only HTML. The whole thing must be like less than a kilobyte, which is nice. Now, of course, the other problem is because it's the internet, some people looked at the website and they looked at his game reviews, and they're like, oh, what's he got in here? Fortnite. Yeah, okay, kids in a Fortnite. Overcooked, he likes playing that on the Xbox with his sister. Call of Duty, he shouldn't be playing Call of Duty. You're an irresponsible parent. So, oh, my God. So, I made a Nerf gun wall for him as well. Like, how far do we want to take this argument? Maybe that's not actually the point of the tweet, and you should stop bugging me and actually go and do something useful in life. Anyway. Moving on. George says, no CSS. George, there is CSS, mate. There is a block of unsafe inline CSS. That's another discussion I have with him at some time. And we just sort of started talking about selectors and things like that. So he'll get into that. And I guess the joy of just starting with something like this is it doesn't matter what's there. He's got code. All right, some people are going to argue HTML isn't code, it's markup, whatever. He's got stuff on the internet and it's working. And, you know, the really fun thing, I did some parent-teacher interviews with his school this week, and I bumped into one of his mates at school, and he's like, I saw Ari's website. It's awesome. And, like, this is all it is. It's some text. But his mates were like, this is cool. You built something, and you've put it out there for the world. And that's cool. I think that is cool. Now, yeah, Michael Wright says, the content and everything is irrelevant. He's 10 and he has deployed a site to the internet. Yep, thanks, mate. And that's absolutely the point. And I don't know where it will go or what he'll do with it and all that sort of thing. He might look back at this on archive.org in a decade from now and go, you know, isn't this crazy? Look at what it does now. I don't know. And this is what's so joyous about the internet is that we can all start with really humble beginnings and make amazing things. And that's, again, to tie back to Have I Been Pwned, that's what it is. And I remember back in the day, all of those feelings I had about the excitement of building things on the internet from the very first time I did in the mid-90s through to new things I build today, where it's like, this could be anything I want it to be. And I can sit here in my own room without a formal education, I dropped out of uni, or any of the fancy stuff, and I can do this. And anyone can. And I think that's just amazing. And we're all very privileged to be in this industry. Okay. Right. I love the bit where he says, my dad has another website, HIV. I have not seen that. Did he mention Have I Been Pwned in this? That's really cool. Does he? Or does he spell it wrong? Oh, man. Oh, look at that. I didn't actually read the content. Hi, my name is Ari Hunt. I'm 10 years old. I have gone to Oslo and London to talk at NDC Security. I ran a code club to help kids understand code. My dad runs another website called Have I Been Pwned? Oh, that's sweet. Oh, that's so nice. I haven't seen some of the stuff he's done more lately, so I suspect he's updated that. That's super awesome. Thanks for pointing that out. I appreciate that. All right, moving on to other topics. Things I learned this week. I learned the server rack I bought for my big network rebuild was too small. People told me when I bought it, it's going to be too small. And I went, nah, look, it'll be fine. You know, who would need that much rack? And more specifically, the problem is the thing people said is they said it's a 600 mil deep rack. And that's fine for networking equipment. But if you want to put a server in it later on, it won't be big enough. Now, first of all, people told me this after I bought it. So I was literally like, here's a photo of the rack and me putting all the things in it. And other people are like, yeah, that's going to be too small. Okay, that's good timing. So I sort of went, look, number one, I don't plan on putting servers in it. Number two, if I do, the rack itself, in the scheme of all the things that go into my house in order to enable me to do what I do, is not really much money. I mean, it's like $600 for an 18RU, very, very nice rack. Not too bad. Pre-tax. So and I should be fine. So then, and I made a mention of this in the blog post that was published today, I went and bought a UPS. And I went, okay, I'm going to get like a little tower UPS we'll talk about in a moment that sits down there to power my desktop. And because I've got a server rack, I'm going to put a rack-mounted UPS in my server to keep the network things alive. Because what I want to make sure of, I'll give a perfect example. Recently, someone came to check the smoke alarms because you got to do like regular checks on your smoke alarms. And he went, look, I've just got to cycle the power. And I went, oh, shit, okay. So I've got to shut down my PC gracefully. I've got to also shut down the NAS gracefully because I tell you what, NASs don't like it if they get too many unscheduled power shutdowns. Ask me how I know. And what else is still running? And the power's off for like 2 minutes. And it just kind of reminded me, and I have had UPSs in the past, but it just kind of reminded me I need something to keep the things alive, not just because of that, because of possible brownouts, because a circuit gets tripped somewhere, whatever else it may be. So I ordered the UPS, and I just remember it must have been a week and a half ago, unwrapping it and looking at it going, shit, that's a big UPS. And I took the rails out so that there's rails that are extendable because you could have racks of different lengths. And I went to put the rail in the server rack and it just wouldn't collapse far enough. I was like, ah, crap. And I actually tried to return the UPS. I thought I'll just put like a little tower in the server cabinet. Apparently it was a special order item, no returns. And then I went, well, actually, a new rack of about twice the size is around about half the cost of the UPS anyway. So anyway, I end up with an 800 millimeter deep rack, which is 22RU instead of 18RU. Still fits in the same spot, which is fine. It's like in a cupboard inside my garage near all the wine and spirits and everything. So it still fits in there. I've transferred everything across. And now if anyone is interested in a nice 18RU 600 mil deep barely used rack, let me know because I think that sucker's going onto eBay soon. Yeah, okay, Martin, been there, done that with a short rack and UPS mounts. Yeah. Senosphere, sorry to interrupt. Being from Dutch, I think you mean from the Netherlands, but I get it. I used to live in the Netherlands, true story. The words brownout mean something completely different. Knowing what the Dutch are like, I'm not even going to ask. Not going to ask. Anyway, so moving on. That was a compliment to the Dutch too. Moving on. I'm still getting a lot of emails from people. This is just a note I made about the blog post I made about stress. And it's really, really fascinating to see the different stories that people have had around stress, particularly due to relationship breakdowns and things like that. And I had a meeting this week that sort of put a few things in perspective, and I thought I'd tell you how it went because it was quite fascinating. I went and had a chat with a lady who manages a bunch of my stuff at the bank. Every now and then we catch up and have a coffee because she's a very nice person, and it's nice to be friendly with your bank, pro tip. And she'd gone through a divorce as well, and we're sort of having a bit of a chat about things. And she's like, look, it's you know, in the scheme of things, it's not so bad. I've been shot 3 times by a sniper. I was like, hang on, what? Where did this come from? Anyway, so this lady is, she'd be mid-40s, maybe just over mid-40s, was from I can't remember if it was Bosnia or Croatia or somewhere in that corner of the world. And anyway, around Civil War time, early 90s, she's walking down the street and she said, I saw a flash in a window and then I felt something on my side and I'd been shot and I'd been like shot by a sniper in my hip. And apparently, so she was an 18-year-old girl at the time, 18-year-old girl walking down the street. And she said, apparently what they used to do is they'd shoot you in the hip and then they'd wait till you're down and they'd, you know, take you out completely. I was like, geez. And she's like, yeah, so then I'm down. They shot me in the leg and she's showing me this scar on her leg, sort of freaking bullet hole in her leg. And she said, then they shot me in the head and she shows me her head. And on the top of the head, there's a graze right across there where hair doesn't grow anymore. And she sort of told me a story to give perspective. And I'm like, well, geez, that's, all right, some things have been a bit shit, but I haven't been shot by a sniper, not even once, let alone 3 times. Like, how bad could it be in comparison? So I've had lots of that's the only sniper story I have, but I've had lots of stories from people that are similar, that frankly are much more stressful than some of the things I've had to go through lately. But I do appreciate people taking the time to write. And what's really fascinating as well is a lot of the messages I've gotten, it's not like a sentence of, you know, sorry to hear, it's a rough time kind of thing. It's paragraphs, multiple paragraphs. And it's, it's just amazing, number one, to sort of see how many other stories are out there. And number two, that people want to take the time to see that you're all right. And that's awesome. So I say that as a positive thing. Now, moving on. I got a lot of tweets this week. Actually, let me just see, just while we're talking about snipers and everything, are there any comments here that are maybe relevant? Someone says, the photo of Mill deep rack makes sense of a 3D printer. Oh, don't get me started on 3D printers. I don't. The kids would like it, wouldn't they? It's probably texted. Don't get me started. So a server rack in the garage with the garage door that you can remote control via IoT. Nice to know. So I have not wired up the garage door yet. And incidentally, there are multiple garage doors and there are tricks that I won't talk about yet, but I haven't wired them up. I've still got, they're sitting around somewhere. I've still got the units that I need to do some soldering in and make everything work. Other comments here. Is the Bank of Australia had the data breach when they lost the physical HDDs on the way to the destruction facility? So Frederick's talking about, in fact, I think it was Westpac. I'm trying to remember. Maybe it was NAB. Anyway, one of our big four banks, they had a story a few years ago. In fact, I think the story really came out probably about 2 years ago. It came out during our Banking Royal Commission where they had literally lost drives off the back of a truck, not metaphorically off the back of a truck. They were literally drives on a truck, and the drives had fallen off the truck with customer data. I've used this material in a talk before. And part of the punchline of the talk is there's a quote from KPMG where it's like KPMG was sent in to audit them and they say something like, we retraced the tracks of the truck, but we could not locate the drives. So, I can't remember which bank it was, so I can't remember if it's the one that I use or not. But, yeah, it's a little bit odd. I don't think it was ANZ either, Centresphere. I think it might have – you know what? I think it was Westpac because I recall doing a talk in Westpac and then using that. Or maybe it was Commonwealth. Might have been Commonwealth. I remember Yellow. Anyway, it was a bank. Shouldn't have happened. Now, got a bunch of emails this week about have I been pwned appearing on a Netflix series. And it was actually really funny because there must be a whole bunch of people who all started binge watching this at the same time because it was almost like I simultaneously got messages about have I been pwned being in like episode 3 of season 2. So I think it must have like launched and people are like, it's Corona, where am I going to go anyway? And they've all sat down and started watching the series called How to Sell Drugs Online, which as best I can tell is a comedy because I watched a little bit of it. And, yeah, there's like a little snippet there where Have I Been Pwned appears, which is super cool. I don't think I knew it was going to be on there. Maybe they told me. I don't know. Anyway, when I do the blog post for this, I'll do a blog post tomorrow morning to put this this weekly video into. I will link through to exactly which season and episode and timestamp it was. But going back to the Have I Been Pwned thing again, I do feel kind of chuffed to see something that I've made appear on a series like that. It's like, well, this is actually really cool. Look at this. It's amazing. Anyway. There's a question here. Can we hope to see more collaboration with Stina and Josh? So Stina being the CEO of YubiKey and Josh from Let's Encrypt. We did a talk the other day and it went really well. People seem really happy with it. If they ask me to do another one, I'll do it. We haven't got any others planned though. Normally people want to see me do talks with Scott Helm, so we could do that sometime. You should look at the visitor statistic now after the episode has been out to see if you get an increase in visitors. I highly doubt that, mostly because it's going to be that there's about 150,000 people a day that come to the website anyway. It was about 450,000 uniques according to Cloudflare the other day after the Wattpad breach. I can't see there being a massive uptick on that, and I think it'd be difficult to correlate because it's not like a hyperlink someone can click on and then there's a refer and I can go into Google Analytics and it's like everyone has come from here. It's going to be people manually typing it in. And because it is a season in or season two and multiple episodes, it's not like when something's on primetime TV and it's like, you know, 10,000 British people all sort of type in the URL at the same time. So I think it'd actually be hard to see that uptick. So yeah, Frederick's nailed it here. Guy who's ever been pwned to see whether his friend's girlfriend has a breached account and then asks on the darknet to gather her data and goes off stalking her. Yeah, it was maybe like, I haven't actually watched the whole bit. I've pretty much saw just the have I been pwned bit. It may be a shadier use of it, but I did see that he sort of goes to have I been pwned and then other services as well and obviously tries to find some OSINT data about people. All right, let me talk about the PC. Not just the PC, but the environment, because this has consumed rather a lot of time and, as you can guess, rather a lot of money as well lately. But I want to give it all some good context because this is what I've been doing all of it today. I mean, mind you, we only did like a third of it today and it still took most of today and a lot of it came from other days prior. So for context, I have spent a lot of time working at home for the last decade and a bit. And I wrote a blog post all the way back in 2009 called Building the Ultimate Virtual Office. And this was when I had a corporate job. I used to work for Pfizer. Incidentally, it seems like those guys might be the ones making, I think they said like 100 million coronavirus vaccines for the US and expanding that to a billion. So, you know, good on those guys if they do that. A shame I don't have any shares in Pfizer anymore. So anyway, so I used to work there and there was always this thing, which many of you probably seen pre-coronavirus, where it's like, if you're not present in the office, you're not working. We don't know you're working. Maybe not doing anything. We'd like you to be in the office. And I was trying to make a case that I needed to spend more time from home, largely because I had a role at the time that looked after all of Asia Pacific. And I'm always doing like late calls in the day because Asia Pac is normally a couple of hours from Australia, or I'm working with people in the US and then you've got to do calls in the morning. Stuff's all over the place. Let me just stay home. I've got a good environment. Let me write this blog post showing how much thought I have put into my environment. And originally it went to the internal blog that I'd set up in the company, and then I put it on my external blog. Now, this was December 2009, so this was only a couple of months after I started blogging. Anyway, regardless, it seemed to be relevant. So I thought I'd take that one and I would, almost 11 years on, do another one about everything that I've just redone in the office, because this is sort of my first big rejig of the environment. And the thing that I find with equipment is that everything around me here, I mean, everything from like the phone to the camera to the PCs, whatever, is all part of me being able to do what I do. I stretch myself way too thin. The more efficiently I can work, the better my environment works for me. It literally translates through to this whole time as money thing, particularly given a lot of what I do is literally, yeah, I will do something for you for a cost. The sooner I can get that done, the more time I have to go and do other things. Now, that might be doing other things commercially. It might be going and playing with my kids. It might be going sitting in the sun having a beer, things that I would rather be doing other than the work itself. I like the work. I just want to make it as easy as possible. So I have this really, really clear sense of ROI in my mind, and particularly when it goes down the toilet, when I'm doing something and it feels sluggish, it just burns. If it's something like if I'm working on something and I keep getting interrupted, I just have this massive sense of my productivity going down the toilet, and it kills me. It kills my spirit. So I'm very willing to invest where I get a return on it. So I had a bunch of stuff break, and I've spoken before about how my microphone broke. I had an Electro Voice, RE320. That was a great microphone, got me through a heap of Pluralsight courses. The return on that investment was off the charts because Pluralsight has worked out very well, and it was a good mic, and it's dramatically reduced the amount of editing I had to do because the sound quality was so much better and it didn't pick up a bunch of other arbitrary noises the one before then did. So I replaced that. I'll talk about that mic in a moment. My PC died, so it started making noises right around the time the mic died. I thought it was a fan. I'm like, oh, no problems. I'll just figure out which fan it is and I'll replace it. Job done. Wasn't a fan. Turned out to be the water pump for the water cooling system. And in fact, I've still got that machine sitting in the corner over there as I booted up just long enough to deregister a piece of software or check what I had on a certain drive, because I had a bunch of external drives in there, then shut it down before the whole thing bloody thermal shuts down anyway, because now the CPU is not getting cooled. It was the water pump on the CPU as well. There's one on the GPU too. That seems to be fine, but CPU cactus. So I had a whole bunch of stuff breaking and I kind of went, look, it's been a decade. Let's just, for the most part, clean slate. I kept a few things I'll talk about in a moment. Clean slate, how would I do this? What would I build? Which is quite a nice feeling. It was getting towards the end of the financial year as well. And it's like, the dollars I spend now, I get the tax advantage on a year earlier than the dollars I spend like in a couple of weeks from now. So going through the list, and if you haven't seen it already, this blog post literally is the top one on my website. Now there's lots of pictures here, so I'm going to go through this in fairly logical order. The furniture, this chair, like this is a Herman Miller Aeron chair, right? If we go here, the camera will get in focus. This has been epic. I have had this since the last blog post, more than a decade ago, as I have this table, which is just, it's a fairly normal desk from Domain. Domain being an Aussie furniture retailer. They don't seem to sell it anymore, but it's a solid desk and it looks nice and it's a nice clean white and I just like this clean feeling. So they are great. Stuck with those. No problems there. The microphone I replaced with a Rode, good Aussie brand, despite the O with the line through it, which I never know how to pronounce. It's a Rode Broadcaster, and it is a condenser mic. And a condenser mic, you tend to get a apparently, because I only know what I read, you tend to get a warmer feeling out of your voice, but it might pick up more ambient noise. Now, I have a pretty quiet environment because it's a carpeted floor. There's walls, but then there's curtains and things there. And I'm thinking about doing some sound deadening and other stuff we'll talk about later on. But it's a pretty quiet environment. This mic rocks. I'm super, super happy with it. A lot of people recommended Rode for quality, Aussies, non-Aussies. And then I got in touch with Rode and they went, yeah, get this one. So this, when I put it in the frame, that's the unit just there. It does actually have a little on-air indicator, which you can probably see just on the side there. I don't need that. It also means I can't put it on a shock mount, which I realized after I bought the shock mount and I went, oh, this doesn't fit. But I'm very, very happy with it. So super, super happy with this mic. It doesn't seem to need the shock mount. It's not picking up like vibration from the desk or things like that. And I think I've been doing it long enough now that I'm just a bit conscious about not bumping things, because not only does the mic carry noise, but the camera wobbles when you do that. So let me just see these comments while I'm taking a sip here. Oh, yeah. So there is a Lego Bugatti behind me. Joining that, eventually, when I get time, is a Lego Lamborghini Cyan, which is downstairs on the kitchen table. I am tweeting photos of that as I build it as well. We will get there with that. Let's have a look. What else? Okay, Stream Deck, I'll come back to that. Bitpain and Linux, forget. Oh, you're the guy who runs Linux. I've heard about it. Kidding, don't worry. We'll come back to that. So moving on, microphone. So the microphone I'm really, really happy with. This actually goes on a Rode extendable arm as well. You can probably just see as I move around, that's the very tail end of the arm. That is, it's not original equipment from 10 years ago. I think it's from when I redid all my Pluralsight stuff six years ago, something like that. That still lasts, cabling still lasts. The Yamaha preamp that I've got still lasts as well. That has been just fine. So no problems there. There's samples of all this as well. I mean, you're obviously, you're hearing the sample of the audio now, but there are other samples that I've put on here, which is good. The PC. So this is where the lion's share of the money went, as you can imagine, and it was also one of the ones that I procrastinated about the most. And it was one that people had a lot of ideas about what I should have. A lot of people said, I should get a Threadripper, get an AMD Threadripper. And the Threadrippers have apparently been very good. But what I really wanted to do was I wanted to get, first of all, a pre-built machine. Now, I've spent a lot of time building machines in the past. The one in the corner is in pieces at the moment. As evidence of that, I don't want to build the PC which I am dependent on for my livelihood. And when people pop up and go, oh, it's easy, you just go on to whatever website it is and you buy all your bits and then you get it, you put it all together, take no time at all. It's never that easy. There's always something. There's always not only the procrastination about what all the bits and things you get, and there's a lot of other procrastination in this thread, but then you've got to put the whole thing together, and then you're responsible if anything goes wrong. You can't just take it back to the shop and go, mate, just fix the damn thing for me. So I wanted to get a pre-built turnkey setup. Has to be super reliable because it is literally my livelihood this thing is driving. So I got a Lenovo, and I decided in advance I want a Lenovo because I have left it down in the car. But anyway, I got a lot of other Lenovos, either because I bought them myself in the past or I'm on the Lenovo Insiders program and they send them to me. And I have nothing but good things to say about the reliability, certainly of things like the ThinkPad. Things like the tablets and things, not as much, but the ThinkPad's just super, super solid. Plus, they give me a bit of a discount as well. So I went, look, I just want to get a Lenovo because I'll get a good value for money. If anything goes wrong, I just send it back to them. It's on-site warranty. They'll come pick it up. Job done. I don't have to worry about it. So what's the right one? And I was kind of having a look at it and thinking about what are the things I do. Well, I do a bunch of very memory-intensive things, particularly running SQL Server locally because I do a lot of database analysis on there. And as I said in here, no, the cloud is not the answer to all your problems. I do still want to do stuff locally. Another blog post in draft about why that is. So heaps and heaps of RAM. CPU, not quite as important to me as having a heap of RAM and also fast disks because I often scan through a lot of data on disks as I try and extract out different bits and pieces. So this one has shipped with an NVMe built in on board and I've put another SSD on there and then a spinning RUSC one that's large capacity but doesn't need to run fast. So there's that. Wanted a tower I could put additional disks in. Long story short, when I looked at all the Lenovo options, I ended up going for a P720 ThinkStation. Now, everything with a P in Lenovo is performance. So I've got a P50, which they sent me years ago, which is sort of my backup laptop. When I used to travel, I'd have a backup laptop. And I've got a P1, which is my current day-to-day laptop, both running Xeon processors. So I spec the P720 with two Xeon processors as well. Now, that's quick. It's super quick. I made 128 gigabytes of RAM. And I think probably for all of us, right? Like when you buy a PC, you're always doing this thing of, I have a mental price point where I'll sort of go up to, and I'm going to get as much performance as I can, like up to that price point. And then you're just sort of splitting the cost between CPU and RAM and GPU. So GPU, I went with an NVIDIA Quadro RTX 4000. It's got 8 gigabytes on board there, and it has three DisplayPort sockets. Now, the three DisplayPorts are important too, because I'm going to come back and talk about screens in a moment. Okay, so let me just check the comments for a while here. So, Mark, is it just me or the stream stuttering a bit? Looks good here. Yes, from time to time. Same a bit of stuttering at times. No stuttering here, Melbourne. I don't know. Is it stuttering? Is it not stuttering? I wonder what I get if I do a speed test right now. Dare I do that whilst I'm streaming as well? Speed fan, speed test. Speed fan is a different thing. Okay, if I do a speed test and we absolutely max out the highest NBN plan I can possibly get here, I'm getting 55 megabits down. And I know that NBN has now released higher plans, even the 100 megabit as well. But unfortunately, we've got fiber to the node by the looks of it here, and we just cannot get anything faster. But I am also getting 20 megabits up and a 7 millisecond ping. Now, all of that should be absolutely fine for streaming 1080p. It's not to say it's not my end, but the connection seems okay. Other people seem to be okay. Maybe try 60 frames a second. You know what? This is actually a good question. What does YouTube default to? Or is it going to default to what's coming out of the camera? I'll come back to what's coming out of the camera. But I'll tell you one thing. I'm not mucking around with it now. All right. So I did all that. Got a 900 watt power supply as well. So when you do go and choose, say, a P720 ThinkStation from Lenovo, you can still go through and decide which CPUs do you want, how much do you turn that up, what about RAM, what about GPU, even power supplies. So 900 watts was way more than what I needed, but I do have a bunch of external drives and I'm just not sure how much they'll ultimately consume. So I got all that. It's a good size case. It's tight. It's a firm fit in terms of packing everything in it, but it's got enough room for everything I need to put in it. It's a lot smaller than the old one that I have sitting over there in the corner. And Burton, I did see your comment. Will I replace the pump? I've got to think about what to do. I might even just put a fan on the CPU and then set it up for one of the kids or so. I don't know. At the moment, I'm just trying to get productive again, to be honest. But look, it's the right size. It's interesting. The old PC was 8 years old. And there's a lot of stuff that's just different by default. There's a heap more USB ports. So I've got 7 USB ports on the back. I've got another 4 on the front, so way more USB than what I need, which is good. Onboard Bluetooth, onboard Wi-Fi. It actually has an external aerial for the radio for both of those, which I didn't realize initially, and I was wondering why the Bluetooth keyboard I had was so stuttery. Yeah, so plugged in the external aerial, good to go. But yeah, just a super compact, nice machine. The biggest complaint I have with it, and I've delivered this very bluntly to Lenovo, is getting the cover back on the case is a nightmare. I got to the point where I couldn't get the cover on. And there's so many notches and things. I've got a big photo here on the blog post. I could not get the bastard back on and done up properly. I could get it so it was like a gap of probably about 5 mil. And I eventually figured it out after posting it onto a closed Lenovo forum. If I laid it down flat, it was easier to line everything up. But you shouldn't have to lay the case down flat to get it back on, particularly if you've got all your cables and things nicely lined up. So a bit of feedback to them. They're aware of it by the sound of it, and they are moving on a fix. All right. To the question here, is my setup ever at rest or maybe doing community computing, computation or something? If ever I need to go mobile, I've got a laptop. And both the laptops have Xeon processors and 64 gigabytes of RAM, like they are mobile workstations. So no, this won't move around. All right, let me talk about the screens because the screens are the most epic thing. Oh, gee, I got this weird comment from someone too. Just reminded me. I did actually post a tweet of the screens 2 weeks ago now where what I've ultimately done is I went with an ultra wide in the middle. So it's about like that. And then either side of that, I've got two 27 inches or one each side. So I've got this this massive kind of broad array now of screens. And I procrastinated a lot on many of these things because I could be stuck with this setup maybe for a decade. I don't know. We'll see how long it all lasts. It's a long time commitment. And I wasn't sure, should I get ultra wide? Should I get curved? Should I get higher DPI? Should I have like 4K 27 inch screens? What should I do? And I asked a lot of questions and I read a bunch and I ultimately decided I wanted to go with three screens with an ultra wide in the middle. And in my mind, what I was thinking is that if I have an ultra wide, I can always put something like dead center in front of me, maybe because I'm very sort of analytical and mathematical and I like symmetry and all this sort of stuff. I want to be able to, and I'm a bit offset now because of the length of this boom, but I want to sort of be able to sit here, look straight ahead and not be looking at bezels. And I want to have, so the model I had before, I had four screens, I was looking at bezels. I wanted to be able to, just to sort of see how it felt, having an ultra wide and having multiple windows and working across those as opposed to having smaller screens. And it's awesome. It is so epic. Like I'm really, really stoked about this. There is just something about having an ultra wide as opposed to two 27 inches next to each other, which just fundamentally changes the way you think about the screen. Everything just flows so smoothly between them. And at the moment, in the middle of the screen, I've got the tripod and everything, but off to one side, I've got the YouTube streaming thing. And then off the other side, I've got the blog post I'm talking about. And it all just feels like it's part of the one thing. there's just some mental barrier in my head that just makes this awesome. I got Samsung screens. I put model numbers in the blog post because they look the same. So the 227 inches are almost identical to the ultra wide. You can sit them next to each other and look great. I didn't mention it in the blog post, but I've actually like gaffer taped the back of them. You know how whenever you have two screens, you try and line them up, there's always like a little sliver of light or something. So there's actually tape behind them, not only keeping them in position, but making sure there's no light that comes through, which this is a little thing, but I like that. So they're just awesome. I'm so happy. And people were tweeting after I sort of put that big one up there and saying things like, you know, you're going to get neck strain. Well, then not really, because this is not neck strain. I can literally swivel on my comfy chair and it's fine. And in fact, what I find myself doing is I put the things that might distract me over there and I put the things I want to focus on there. And that actually works really, really well for me. I'm super happy about that model. Now, I'm going to load up a tweet that was kind of funny. I sent this to Scott the other day. This is the way I find this again. Where are we? Because it was kind of hilarious. Oh, here we go. Now, while I'm waiting for that to load, looking at the comments here, stream looks great. That's great. Is your setup ever at rest or maybe doing – no, we've covered that one. What's your display scaling settings for your monitors? Display scaling settings. Everything's just running at native resolution. So let me tell you exactly what those reses are. So the 24s are running at 2560 by 1440. And the ultra wide should be running at literally double the horizontal pixels and the same vertical pixels. So we are running at 5120 by 1440. So having the same number of vertical pixels in the same amount of space was really important, because when I drag something between screens, as I'm doing now, it's just seamless. So when I tweeted this, and I've embedded the tweet in the blog post, well, I tweeted this video, like a zoom around these screens, and people were like, this is amazing, this is awesome. One person here. Okay, so just to be clear, the tweet, what did the tweet say? The only thing I had in the tweet was one of the emoji with like the love heart eyes, and then I had it zooming around. 1,600 likes. One person says, rich man office, are you showing off? So many IT people in the world could not afford half of one monitor or that ergonomic desk. I tell you, this just bugs me. So it bugs me so much. I'm like literally going to just copy a link to this and I'm going to put it in the comments just in case anyone wants to join in the conversation. And I sort of went back to the guy and I went, so many people in the world could not afford the pocket-sized supercomputer you tweeted that from, but that doesn't seem to bother you. It's like, what? Why are you jumping into a Twitter feed that everyone's excited about and just basically, what do they say, like pissing in someone's cornflakes? I do not understand the point of doing that. It's just so pointless. Question here, am I happy to ship Have I Been Pwned stickers? I'm happy for you to ship Have I Been Pwned stickers to yourself. If you Google Troy Hunt Have I Been Pwned stickers, there's a blog post about how to do precisely that. So if you want stickers, you can do it. You just got to organize it yourself because I'm busy and stuff. Now, going back to the build here. So the screens were epic, highly, highly recommended. When I did there's a poll embedded here about when I was asking people, should you actually, for anyone who's had an ultra wide, are you happy with it? 60% of people, rounds to 61% of people, said yes, they would do it. So I fully endorse that message. And I've been using this setup now for a solid, probably week and a half, I'd say. No neck strain. And if you lose your mouse cursor, as some people have said, you go into your mouse settings, you toggle on the control. So then when you press control, it's like, oh, there's my mouse right there. And then I can move it somewhere. I don't know where it is. Press control. Oh, there it is. It's over there. It's not that hard. All right. Now, fancy zones. So many people said get fancy zones. Fancy zones is part of Power Tools. If you have fancy zones, you can define snappable areas of any screen. It doesn't have to be an ultra wide, where you can then hold down the control key, drag a window and drop it, and it will snap and it will fill that area. So what I've done, in fact, I can do this now with my YouTube window, is I've defined three vertical areas equally spaced. It's a pretty light beer too, trust me. Equally spaced in the ultra wide, so I can go hold shift, drop that YouTube one over there, hold shift, drop the other one over there. And there's not much point putting anything directly behind the camera because it's behind the camera. But you can divide that space up and it looks amazing. So Fancy Zone's cool. Part of Power Toys. It is free. It's highly, highly, highly recommended. Give that a go. So that's good. I have found that the ultra wide is actually really useful for things like looking at a data breach. Now, what often happens in a data breach is you'll get a bunch of SQL insert statements. Sometimes you get a CSV. And I'll be looking across the columns and there'll be like, let's say there's 20 columns. And there's a column called, date of birth. All right. Short of me sucking this into a spreadsheet, does anyone have a date of birth? And when everything's kind of wrapping, it's very, very hard to tell. But I literally just maximize the screen. There's a screen cap of this. Maximize the screen out to the full nearly 5,500 pixels wide. And the whole thing just fit. And I was just oddly excited about that. Some things it doesn't do well. If you try and maximize a video on an ultra wide, you basically end up with like a 16:9 screen in the middle and massive black bars there, and then your timeline all the way across the bottom. So I tend to like grab a YouTube thing, stick it over there, and I'll play it on that screen because just mentally my emails are always over on that screen, which is fine. So that is that. That works really well. Do I have a Linux alternative for Fancy Zones? Let me do what they do on Twitter. Get a PC. Let me not answer your question and tell you to do something completely different. Sorry, I got no idea about Linux. If anyone else does, maybe chime in with a comment in there. All right, so that is all awesome. Happy with the screens, the monitor arms. This was the next thing. And I hadn't originally planned to do this until someone said, you really should get monitor arms. And then I had the big monitor sat originally on a stand here. And I was like, that stand does kill a lot of space because you need a big stand for a big monitor. So all the levering and all that sort of stuff. So I got three Ergotrons, and one of them is a heavier duty unit that's holding the big fella there, and the two of them are the lighter ones. They're holding the smaller ones, and it just cleans up the desk so nicely. And you'll see in the blog post there's a couple of images of what the desk looks like, and it's neat. It's beautiful. I love it. I'm so happy with those stands. And monitor stands as well, the sort of thing that I think should last for a very long time, particularly high quality ones. So a lot of what I've spent setting this stuff up is a little bit like the chair, where it's expensive to go and buy a Herman Miller chair. And it was particularly expensive in my position in life back when I did, but it pays off and it lasts over and over again. Now, moving on. Look at Tim. Love the story about your son publishing a page. Yeah, thanks, mate. It's a happy story. We need more happy stories. All right, so those monitor arms are awesome, and, of course, they do a really good job of hiding the cables as well. I didn't mention this in the blog post. In fact, I do need to do a bit more cable management. Last week I held up several packets worth of cable management units to kind of wrap around. I need to do more of that. I'm going to do that. I've then got the embedded picture with all the lights. We'll come back to the lights in a moment. But it does look pretty awesome. And I'm sure some people ask as well, but the background image I have on my screens was from a mountaintop in Norway at Christmas, and I did a massive panorama. So when I set this up, I was like, all right, I've got to get a really cool image. Went to the phone, went to panoramas, and that one just stood out. And it's just, it looks spectacular. I'm so happy with it. Moving on. What else we got? The camera, which, of course, I am looking at right now. So this was Burton's suggestion. So thank you again, mate, for suggesting that. It was a really good idea. The normal webcams that we've all probably used for many, many years, they're webcams. they're not exactly high-quality lenses or anything like that. So the Sony a6400, which I'm looking at now with the Sigma 1.6mm lens, 16mm lens, and then the, what was the focal length on that? 1.4. Focal length is great. And what's great about it, and I've made this point in previous videos as well, is that I'm looking at the pop-up screen on the Sony and I can see it like face tracks me perfectly and the lens adjusts focus so well. So if you have a look at the moment, if I'm up really close and you have a look at, say, that Bugatti in the background, it's really out of focus. So you get that like nice bokeh effect. And even if I move my hand back, it starts to go out of focus. But as I move my face, because the camera can face track, I stay in focus the whole time, which is super cool, no matter like how fast you try and dodge around it. So that works really, really well. Frederick, I seem to recall you're from Norway, Frederick. So that was in Mulai on the west coast. More stories for another time. But yeah, that's a really, really nice picture. So the lens is super cool as well, which is really good. How's the camera when two people are showing? Well, I don't think Scott's coming here anytime soon, so that's going to be a bit of a hard one to tell. Maybe I can get one of the kids to do a session with me. I could try that, but I honestly haven't tried it with two faces. It's a good question. And then what happens if one face goes back and the other face goes? I mean, inevitably something's going to be out of focus. No zoom as well. So it is a fixed, we call it a prime lens if there's no zoom. Anyway, you can't zoom. But it's fine because this really is just the right length. The main thing I've got to do with this is I've got to get a better mount for it. So it's sitting on a fairly robust but portable mount at the moment. I do have some Elgato, what do I call them, multi-link, somethings, which will allow me to mount it to the back of the desk over the back of the monitor and grab it. I'm not entirely convinced that that's going to be the right way to do this, but we'll see. We'll see. And then, of course, it all runs through an Elgato Camlink 4K. Elgato has either directly or indirectly gotten a bit of money out of me out of this thing. The reason I've indirectly got it is I just could not get the Camlink anywhere retail. I had to get it off eBay. I paid, I think, about 20% more off eBay than what the retail prices were because I just could not get one anywhere else. The people on eBay seem to know this. So I think at one stage, like I'd won it because it was just an open auction, and then they pulled it because it was too low, and then they relisted it higher, and I think I went and bought it anyway. But it is consistently rated as the HDMI to effectively USB Cam Link. So did that. That's all fine. Fingerprint reader. Now, I literally have it sitting down here next to me because I used to use the Sony Brio that had Windows Hello integration by virtue of having the IR in it. And that would sit up there on the monitor and I'd look at it and it would unlock. Because that's now gone in place of this camera, I needed another means of biometric auth. So I got this Verify one, which is fine. It's nicely built. It, as I said in the blog post, it is a little bit slower than using the fingerprint reader on either of my laptops. So the built-in ones on the Lenovo just, bam, is straight in. This one, do we call it 500 millisecond latency? Something like that. It's enough for me to notice. I wish it was faster, but it's not enough for me to want to enter a password instead. Put it that way. Password would be much worse speed-wise. Lighting. Oh, this is a fun bit. It's partly fun because I've been putting a lot of lights in the kids' room lately. And I've tweeted some photos before of my son's room. So we built him a Nerf gun wall and we put like neon and stuff behind that. And then we put neon behind his bookshelves. And he's got neon under his bed. Seems to be the thing for 10-year-old kids these days, or big kids like me. So I wanted to partly just play with the IoT stuff a little bit, but partly also just try and get the lighting in this office in a fashion that I'm comfortable sitting in here. Now, at the moment, everything is like presentation lights. And I'm just looking at the image. I think the lighting's okay at the moment. I've got one a little bit higher than the other because they create different shadows and things like this, and I can adjust the brightness and the warmth on each of these. And they're big light panels, but they're not really the sort of thing you want to have on the whole time. So I got a couple of Philips Hue Go's that are sitting on each side just there. And I had a Philips Hue light strip, which was actually in my server cabinet. I stole it out of there today, and I attached that under the desk. And now I've still got two different modes. I can do the whole lighting thing like that, or I can do the warm, glowy kind of mode. And what I want to be able to do, in fact, someone's just made the comment here, have you given it, could you for a second switch to work lighting? So this is what I'm going to do. So I've got the Elgato Stream Deck I'm going to talk about. So at one click of a button, check this. We'll see how quickly this camera adjusts. Oh, look at that. It actually adjusts pretty well, doesn't it? This actually isn't terrible. Wow, I'm impressed. Maybe I need some more lighting on the back. Actually, one of the reasons I wanted to get this lens is because the lens is really good in low light too. I'm really impressed. Now, mind you, with all of this screen real estate in front of me, I do get a lot of lighting on my face. Now I look like a Twitch streamer. I think I'm going to leave it on here for a while just to make the point. This actually works really well. I don't mind this too much. I don't know that I'd be using this for like professional webinars and things like that, but this is actually not too bad. So what I did, I've kind of made the comment here. I wanted to get Philips Hue stuff, which is not the cheapest, but what Philips Hue does is it's Zigbee based. Now you can use the Philips Hue hub, or you can go and actually connect it to something like the Conbee 2, which I've got plugged into my Home Assistant, which is in my running my Raspberry Pi down on my server rack. And what will happen then is that the Hue units will act as a Zigbee repeater. So I put a little image in here that's been driven off the Decons add-on into Home Assistant that shows that I've now got all of these little Zigbee-based things like temperature sensors that are connecting to the Philips Hue lights, acting as a repeater, which then sends a signal downstairs. I'm just looking at all the comments here. People seem to really like this. Well, that would work. Oh, wow. Even fine with the lighting. I love it. Looking good. Oh, that's cool. Does it make me seem younger? Like sitting here full of neon lights instead. I've got to leave this on. Screw it. So the Philips Hue do actually have a functional benefit as well. So this is actually really neat, being able to do something that works really well in terms of actually driving the other parts of my whole IoT world. Incidentally, I do have a mammoth IoT blog post in progress too, although this one's over 6,000 words. So there you go. So they all work. Now, in order to power the Fovitec lights, I'm going to flick it back again for a second, then we'll go back to mood lighting because I think it's kind of cool. I've got a powered a socket. So it's a Wi-Fi enabled socket. I actually went to Bunnings and I got an Arlec one, which was pretty cheap. Just today I had a couple of other ones arrive from Amazon, which were TP-Links. Many people suggested those. They're going to go in the kids' room. But the cool thing with this Stream Deck is I just push one other button. Watch this. Oh, holy shit, that's bright. Let's go back to the other one. So it's just a button press away. And what the button press is doing is there's a little add-on for the Stream Deck, which allows you to make a post request to a webhook endpoint on Home Assistant, which then calls an automation, which then turns on a scene. And then the scene sets the power to the Fovitec panels on, and it sets one Hue go, two Hue go, and then it sets the Hue strip lights underneath as well. How's that? Getting there. Now, what I will do as well, and I made a bit of a comment on this, is I'm going to get I've already got some little sensors. And these sensors are both motion and light sensors. And what I can do, I'll find some, I might even just sit it on the shelf or something in the background. I'll sit the little sensor over there. And then if there's no movement after, like, I don't know, 15 minutes, just turn all the lights off. Don't need the lights. And then if I come in at night and all the lights are off, there's movement. Turn the lights on, which is kind of cool. All right, so other things on the Stream Deck. I've got a really epic thing on the Stream Deck, and I hope this sound comes through. So the idea of the Stream Deck is that they're 15 programmable keys with LCD images behind them. Not quite sure what resolution they are, but they're enough to have pretty crisp icons. And the Stream Deck, can't hold it up. Anyway, it's in the blog post. The Stream Deck it sits there, it's tilted up, it's very easy for me to go and like press a button, and then we can perform certain actions. There's a whole bunch built into the little Stream Deck app on the PC, and of course people can write extensions for it as well. So for example, people have written Spotify extensions. So I can just go, okay, let's keep playing whatever I was playing last, like that. Ooh, no, that's okay, that's got an error, that's no good. What about this one? Let's see if that one works.
Look into my eyes, can you see it?
Press again. Oh. Okay, now I don't know how to stop it. Hang on. There we go. I'll go and actually stop it on Spotify. But the cool thing about that is I can sit here and go, I feel like some music, bam, and it just plays whatever list is going at the moment. I then thought what would be really good fun is for the next time the kids come and, they come into the office and they're like, look, I've had a really hard day in school. They made me do homework. I had to sit there. I had to sit up straight. I had to tuck my shirt in. I got another button where you do this. I hope that sound comes through. So I said, okay, so tell me how hard it was at school today. Uh-huh. Yeah. What else did you have to do? Oh, we dropped you off. You didn't have to walk. It was warm. It was comfortable. No problems. Okay, how about that? No cares at all in life, these kids. So Sad Violin. Incidentally, there is sadviolin.com. It comes in handy many, many, many times. So there's that. We're getting there. I really hope that sound came through because it's epic when you're just sitting here. And particularly when someone comes in and they're actually like really sad about something, which they shouldn't be sad about. And you're just like, do-do. Mouse and keyboard. So I mentioned here that I have had some degree of RSI for probably the better part of 15 plus years. Never major, right? Like it's never actually stopped me from working. But I can get I can feel the pain in my hand. Where I feel it at the moment is when I play tennis, and I don't play gentle, but when I play hard, particularly a flat shot, like let's say it's a hard volley, I feel it like all the way down my arm, particularly in the elbow. And I do get a lot of physio and stuff like that too. But ergonomic gear makes a hell of a difference. So I started using Microsoft ergonomic mice and keyboards back then. Let's call it 15 years ago. And then as time's gone by and they've worn out, I've just replaced them with newer ones. And the ones I had were pretty crusty. So I got some new ones. And these are Microsoft Surface Precision Mouse, which I can actually hold up to the screen there. It looks like this. It's a nice gray one. And you can see like they're a little bit funky in their shape. I'm holding it by a little tab on the side where you rest your thumb. They're not ambidextrous. This is made for a right-handed person. I don't know if they do them for left-handed people or not. But it's such a nice feeling mouse, like just the scroll wheel. I don't know why I'm so infatuated with the scroll wheel. It just feels great. And then I also got a Microsoft Surface. And, of course, it doesn't have to be used with a Microsoft Surface, but a Microsoft Surface ergonomic keyboard, which is the one that you see here. Same color, so it matches, which is nice. And then as you see in the image, I actually got a matching mouse mat, which is it's basically just a piece of felt, but same sort of color. And there's a bit of felt on the palm rest of the keyboard as well, and it just feels lovely. And as I said in the blog post, I feel like I was going a little bit overboard. I'm sure someone will accuse me of Microsoft bias or something, but they just feel really, really nice to have your hands on. It's lovely. I'm very, very happy with this. All right. I have a lot of tennis awards. Yeah, so what you can't read from there is that they're all from when I was a teenager. And I have none since. So make of that what you will. I'm living vicariously through my son at the moment. Have you tried mechanical keyboards? I love the MS keyboards and mice, but just not for me. Look, I have in the past. For me, the thing that's more important is how my hands sit. And I remember back in the day when I started using these and doing a bunch of reading, and it's like, look, have a look at how your hands are. If your hands are flat, you're really rotating them in quite a bit. Your hands naturally want to point the thumbs up a little bit more. And in fact, if you walk along and you open your palms, you can see this because your thumbs point forward. So to then sit and rotate them almost 90 degrees is really counterintuitive. So for me, that's the number one thing. So what's going to be good for my hands? I know Scott Hansman's always really fond of saying, I have so many keystrokes available in my life and I need to make the most of the keystrokes. And yeah, if I don't look after my hands, I'm effectively going to minimize the keystrokes. And look, I'm going to be eaten by a shark or something before that happens. I'm not too worried about that. But there's some truth in terms of looking after the things that ultimately are what keep probably most of us employed. And finally, UPS. So I had an APS UPS years ago, and it was crap. Like it died so quickly, and I suspect it probably died within the warranty period, but I just never got myself into gear and returned it or anything like that. Maybe the battery just died and it just needed a new battery. I don't even know, but it got to the point where it was like, look, a UPS is not something that you use a lot because it's made a combination of things. You could have brownouts, you could have surges, you could have complete power cut. I made a comment in here by plugging my speakers, which were getting line noise on them, into the power socket of the UPS. It actually got rid of all the line noise. So there's a bunch of things I do. Regardless, I wasn't happy with the APS. I only recently threw it out. Responsible e-waste, by the way. There is a way to dispose of things like that with big batteries. So I got the Eaton unit. And the Eaton unit, I'm happy with the size. I'm happy with the number of sockets it's got on it. I've got 14 minutes worth of power running the big ultra wide, the PC, the switch, which my PC is connected to and also has an access point, which is PoE driven. And incidentally, downstairs, where I've got the big one in the rack, we'll talk about that another day, that drives everything that is critical to actually keeping the internet on. So at the moment, I can have power go out in the whole house. I can still work on the PC. I can still send things backwards and forwards over the internet. And that was kind of the goal. And of course, it's running the speakers as well. I've got 14 minutes worth of standby time, unless I'm crunching something heavier on the PC and it's drawing more power, but you get what I mean. So that's fine. And as I said here, the only problem that I have with this is that the fan is noisy. Now, you probably can't hear the fan because the mic with the pop filter and everything as well, I imagine, keeps that out. I certainly haven't been able to hear it when I've listened back, but I can hear it. And when I sit here with like no music or anything, perfectly quiet, I can hear it and it bugs me. And I want to fix that. So I'm thinking about trying to do a little soundproof enclosure and then maybe just like building in a big fan on the back of it to suck air. I don't know what to do. I got to figure it out. But I really want to get rid of that noise because it bugs me. And it's the only thing about this entire setup, which I don't think is either perfect or close to it. But hey, that's not bad. One little thing. Okay. Looking at some comments in here. Right. What do we got here? I need to try that keyboard. I can't do normal mice anymore. The keyboard's one of these things where, have you ever sat down at someone else's computer and you just can't type for shit, right? Like, because it's someone else's environment and it's not what you're used to. And honestly, when I started using this, it felt so weird. And as you can see, like it is a split keyboard. And in a perfect world, I would be able to touch type a lot better. And I would have the right fingers on the right sides and it would all work well. Point is, it is something to get a little bit used to. But I think it's also the thing worthwhile investing time in as well. MX Ergo is great, though. That's the monitor arms. Sebastian from Denmark. We've had many beers. I don't know when we'll be doing that again next, mate. But, yeah, they are great, great monitor arms as well. Frederick's had a Logitech trackball. I've never actually gone down the trackball path. That might be something that I just need to get used to as well. But who knows? I'm happy with what I've got here at the moment. Paul has said APS or APC. It should have been APS. Did I say APC? Maybe I was thinking Australian personal computer. It was an APS, and it doesn't work. So Time Spacer has had RSI a decade back. Learned to use the left mouse and switch throughout the day to spread the load over 2 weeks. Wow, I'm impressed. Like, I imagine that would be hard because I can barely do anything with my left hand other than throw a tennis ball up to serve, and that's about it. I can type a bit, I guess, but I always feel odd with the mouse. But I imagine that would be really, really helpful to, like, literally, as you say, spread the load. What else have we got in here? Yeah, I'm not going to start wearing noise-canceling headphones to make my freaking UPS quieter. It doesn't feel quite the right way of going about this, if I'm honest. Become one with the Vi and ditch the mouse. So someone actually asked me when I was, in fact, I think it was a long-time friend of mine, when I posted on Facebook about my son and his website, they're like, so are you teaching him with Vi or Emacs? I'm like, you sicko. No. That's one thing that you might have to use Vi in the future. I don't know. But I think we'll just start with the basics. Can you put the old server rack with soundproofing around it? Yeah, I've got to figure it out because the thing is that there's only, as far as I can tell, there's only a fan on the back. It's blowing out towards the wall. One of the things I made a comment on in here actually is I'm tempted to take this wall, and this wall is probably about, let's call it 4 meters wide by 3 meters high, thereabouts. And it's got a couple of different bits and different areas for curtains and things. I'm tempted to cover the whole thing in soundproof material, which is nice to look at because it is a stark white wall. It's boring as, and I wouldn't mind the functional value of having some sound deadening material just to quieten this room down. And I'm wondering if sound deadening material right behind that fan as well might help take a bit of the noise out because it's probably bouncing back off that wall. But of course, that'd be easy to test. I could just get like a sheet of that because you can buy it in like, I don't know, 50 centimeter square sheets and pop it behind there and see if it works. So I may do that. That may be on the cards. And I've realized that if I do that, the lights that are currently bouncing off the wall kind of won't work anymore if they are like a dark material that fragments light off in different directions. Or fragments any radio waves off in different directions, which is kind of the whole point. Okay, what else? There's some funny comments here. Coloring is actually pretty good, by the way. Everyone's like, is this the thing? Is this what I should do now? Should I just do the video with this coloring? I noticed Hanselman doing things with LEDs recently as well, like fluorescent kind of neon LEDs. And I was like, wow, you're aging backwards. This is really, really interesting. Maybe I should do it more. I do need a little bit more light, if I'm honest, for normal work. So I might need to think about some other lighting somewhere or other. But yeah, maybe that'll be something else to tie into the whole IoT thing as well. It could use egg boxes for sound deadening. That's a good point. Suggestion, use the current lighting for evening streams and the bright white one for the morning ones. The thing is, it's always evening or morning somewhere, isn't it? So, there's always a bit of a mix. Egg boxes, lots of support for egg boxes. I guess because of the shape, it should bounce off those radio waves. There you go. MS build the different colors. Not quite sure the point there, Burton. Wear a hoodie and you look like a hacker. Probably would, wouldn't I? I'll give that a go next time, maybe. So, look, I've been going for an hour 20 now. This actually turned out to be a lot longer than usual. I did know it was going to be long because there was a lot of stuff in here, in particular the PC build stuff. I think people are really interesting. To Mikhail's question now, is this the lighting for when you work? I'm deciding yes, but, I mean, mind you, most of the work I do these days is during the day. I have the blinds up there and I've got natural light and I've got a lot of greenery outside the window, which is a nice sort of peaceful environment. So that is my norm. Look, the blog post is there. I did put a footnote in here and said I haven't actually proofread it. So I haven't spell checked it. I haven't run it all through Word and made sure that I haven't, used the wrong theirs or anything like that. So I will do that tomorrow. I just wanted to get it out, get this blog post done. It's 7:45 here in Australia at the moment. So I do want to try and tune out and have a nice peaceful Friday night as well. Thanks very much for watching this. If you have questions about the setup, chuck them in the blog post. I'm sure there will be a bunch of people with different questions, and I will go through and probably tweak a bunch of this tomorrow too. But look, thanks for watching, and particularly for the feedback around the fact that this lighting is actually kind of cool. So I might need to do more of this after I finish sort of tuning out of this. I might go and have a look at it on the iPad to see what it actually looked like. But from what I can see from the video over there, it's actually pretty sweet. I like that. So thanks very much, everyone. Hope you guys have an awesome weekend as well, wherever you are in the world. And I'll do this again next week, maybe with the mood lighting again. Cheers, folks. See ya.